You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
This is a Hat Trick podcast.
Oh, lovely.
Do you remember your sex education? Was it helpful to you? Was it filled with scientific information rather than real, practical advice? I'm Diggory Waite, and this is The Real Sex Education. In this podcast, I'll be interrogating sexual myths, posing sex questions to special guests, and opening up our mailbox to answer your relationship conundrums. In order to do this, though, I need an expert. A sexpert, if you will. But the only sex and relationship therapist I know is my mum. Hello, Mum.
Hello, Diggs.
Okay, are you ready?
No.
Okay. Hello and welcome to The Real Sex Education. I'm Diggory Waite and I'm joined as ever by accredited sex and relationship therapist, Kate Campbell. Hello, Mum.
Hello, Diggs.
Can you tell that during that I was smiling the whole way through and trying my hardest not to laugh?
Why?
Because I just went, are you ready? And you went, no. And we just got over there anyway. And that probably happens every single episode. Now, I'm storing together like loads of little clips of us before we start recording, and some of them are mad.
Don't do that. No, I want to vet that before that's allowed out.
Yeah, but that's true.
I can just imagine.
Yeah, some of the things we discuss and stuff we talk about.
No, it's the faces I make.
Oh, right. Yeah, that's it's crazy.
Faces.
Yeah. Yeah. If any of your clients saw, I mean, they wouldn't be clients anymore. They'd leave.
Well, I'm surprised they stay anyway when they see this.
That's true enough.
Sorry, guys.
Yeah. Well, listen, today's episode might help some of them out anyway, though. They might find some of this helpful because shame isn't the sexiest word in the world, but what is shame?
It's that feeling that you're worthless, not good enough, you aren't what you should be. You're ostracized, people won't like you, all of that. And it's pretty horrible.
Yeah. And when we were talking about it before, off air, we were saying that we've all got it.
We all have the capacity for shame. Mm. And the reason for that is it's a pro-social emotion, which makes us want to be part of the group. It makes us want to be acceptable. And it's the reason that we don't run around murdering people and stealing, and that we have guilt, we have shame, we have feelings that we ought to be conforming to some sort of standard. And that we will feel bad about ourselves if we don't conform. So we want to be accepted by the group. And of course we want to be accepted by the group because we would be in danger if we didn't have the structure of a community around us.
So shame is you're saying there, is like we want to be part of the group. It stops us from killing and lying and all that sort of stuff. Mm-hmm. What about people, though, that don't have that? Do they not have any shame?
Well, some people who've been treated so badly or had such a terrible, neglectful experience that they haven't been socialised. Their experience has always been bad. They've never been felt part of the group. They don't have that incentive to try and be part of the group because the group hasn't been good to them, has always rejected them anyway.
And that will add to their shame, will it not? They will think, well, yeah, I'm treated badly, so I must be bad, so I'm going to be bad.
Well, I mean, there's just no point in having feelings, really. If you feel so worthless that there's no point to anything, let's just imagine you had abusive, neglectful parents, just for the sake of argument, or you were brought up in an orphanage in a horrible place where they couldn't really look after you, and you had, or you know, it was like being in a prison cell, and there was nobody to look after you, nobody to cuddle you, nobody to love you, your needs weren't met. Chances are you would grow up feeling there's no point in trying.
Oh my God. Okay. How about this? You're, orphan, you're shoved under the stairs. You have an awful stepbrother who is clearly...
Oh, is this Harry Potter?
I've never heard of that. I don't know what you're talking about. Anyway, but you have these horrible foster parents who claim that they're, you know, one of them is the aunt of your mum, but she treats you like trud. Don't know what trud is. And your uncle, he's horrible as well. And they treat you like rubbish. Would you not have loads of shame and think, wow, I'm a really terrible person. They've shoved me under the stairs. They treat the other guy like he's class. I don't have any parents. These people aren't filling that role. I'm being treated like a bad person. I'm going to think I'm a bad person.
If you also had a mark on your forehead that said you were full of shame.
I think it's a thunderbolt. I don't think it says I'm full of shame.
Well.
Sorry.
But isn't there some shame associated with that? Look, I think Harry Potter's a pretty bad example, to be totally honest with you. I don't know why we're going down the Harry Potter route.
I just really thought I could help you out then, but you're
That's
right.
That's really
make any
not
sense.
Helpful. Because it's just going to confuse everybody.
Okay. Sorry. So, but it's not pro-social in their circumstance because the pro-socialness of it hasn't been very pro.
There's nothing you've got to want to rejoin the welcoming group, and if you've got no reason, and I mean, if that isn't attractive, why would you do it?
Yeah.
And there's a massive difference as well between shame and guilt, although you may not think so on the surface, because guilt is about a behaviour. It's about something that you do. You know, if you break something, you may feel very, very guilty about breaking it, but you won't feel like a terrible person. But if somebody comes along and shouts and screams at you and says you've done a terrible thing because you're worthless and useless and you always do that, then you might grow up with a very exaggerated sense of shame and low self-esteem.
Is it the difference between I go to a party, I say something stupid to someone and I make them feel bad, guilt. I feel guilt about that. I'm like, oh, I'm an idiot. I shouldn't have said that. The opposite, shame, is thinking, I can't go to that party. I'll say something stupid to someone.
Well, actually, yes, that might be. If you had deeply ingrained shame, but what you said at the beginning, I'm an idiot. You called yourself an idiot.
Yeah.
That's shame.
I'm an idiot.
Mm.
Yeah.
I broke the vase. I shouldn't have done it.
I've got it. I gave you the example of Harry Potter when it clearly didn't work.
No.
I'm an idiot.
Ha! Yes.
There you go. Yeah,
yes,
that's
you
it.
Are.
And that's that. Yeah. And that is my shame. I'm like, God, I'm such an idiot. But obviously I feel guilty about it, but also there's this inherent shame. And now I'll take that shame into different things and I'll go, oh God, I'm never going to try and give an example again because all my examples are shit because I'm an idiot.
Well, now you're talking about the progress of shame over time. But if we're just talking about the difference, then one is about a behaviour. The other is about your
inherent
very self.
Feeling yeah,
that
your very
that
self,
your,
yeah.
your very self is bad and awful. And people have different ways of dealing with it. And there was a guy called Dr. Donald Nathanson who organised the way people cope with shame into something called the Compass of Shame, which is like four quadrants with different ways of dealing with shame.
Right.
And hopefully you'll be in the middle somewhere, but people sometimes tend to sit very much in one quadrant or between two.
Well, come on then. What are the quadrants? What are the four ways of dealing with shame?
So one way is withdrawal. So if you feel that you're not good enough, then you might keep out of people's way. So you mentioned, I made a mistake at a party last time, so I'm not going to go to the next party. So you would withdraw. Now, hopefully, when you made that mistake at the party and you said something silly, you would have said to your friends, I'm so daft. Why did I say that? Honestly, I'm so sorry. I didn't mean to.
I'll never talk about Harry Potter again.
And they'll say, oh, don't be daft, mate. Everyone can do that. Yeah, you know, come back in. Yeah. You know, we don't care.
Yeah.
That's what people will say. And they'll draw you back in and forgive you and it'll all be fine. And if you withdraw, you kind of know that you're withdrawing. So it's quite easy to treat that kind of shame. So people with an exaggerated form of that withdrawal would have a lot of self-doubt, low self-esteem, lack of confidence, that kind of thing. That often goes with what's in the next quadrant, which is attacking yourself. So there is a kind of spectrum from attack self to attack other people. as a way of dealing with shame. So at the attack self end, often you get attack self coupled with withdrawal. So people will blame themselves and feel worthless.
Yeah.
You know, and that's where people sometimes have self-harming feelings at that
Well,
end.
Yeah, so it's literally attack self. It wasn't just my thing of, oh, I'm an idiot. It's literally like, I'm an idiot, so I need to hurt myself.
Yeah, sometimes.
That's what I deserve. Oh, God.
Yeah, sometimes. And so sometimes people use self-harm because it may, you know, it actually makes them feel better.
Yes, I know, which, oh God, that's so
sad. So at that end, so, I mean, it's so if you've got that in an exaggerated way, it's quite, you know, it's quite bad. But the thing about it is, you know, you're doing it. So because you know you're doing it, it's more treatable. At the other end, much less treatable.
Well, let's talk about the other
end. So the other end is the attack other people. And also that often goes with avoid. So the avoidant part, the avoidant quadrant, is where you would do anything you could to not feel the shame. So you will push away bodily feelings. You might not even be able to notice anything that's going on in your body, to the extent that you could be ill and not know in some people. And people will do anything they can to build up their persona, to make themselves look great. So they will, you know, buy a big car, flashy car, make loads of money, get a beautiful house, an amazing job, even build a golden tower and become the president, you know.
Those
sorts of incredible things. And they can have a very grandiose demeanor. They can seem very narcissistic, you know, very interested in themselves, not so interested in other people. And the attack other part is that they will never accept blame, or very rarely. They will always find a reason why somebody else caused what happened to happen.
Yes. You know,
they stole the election.
I was like, yeah, now who can we think of that does this?
Well, I can't think of a real person.
No,
in theory.
Someone might have done that.
Someone might do that.
Yeah.
Theoretically. So they will.
I'm sat here thinking now, how can I link this to Voldemort? But I think we've got. We've got it.
Oh, dear. We're all capable of bits of all of those. But I mean, if you're stuck very much in one area, it's worse. And in the avoid area, you've also got people using ways of being to make themselves feel better. So to avoid the feelings that might come up in their bodies, if they were bored or on their own, or, you know, if they had time on their hands, whatever, they will replace that with something. So it could be a hobby, or it could be something like drinking a lot, gambling, lots of sex.
Porn use.
Porn
overuse, yeah.
I mean, because, it could be any of those things.
Because when you're bored, when you're on your own, when you're not being stimulated, that's when it's quiet. And that's when
that's when you notice the feelings. So eating, overeating, undereating to try and get control.
Here it also says distraction through thrill seeking.
Yeah.
So, you know, when people.
Yes.
Is that a good one?
Yes, I'm getting really excited now because this is why.
It's quite a thrill for you, this.
This is why therapists ask what your hobbies are.
Right. And so if I came in and went, hi, okay, yeah, my hobbies, I like bungee jumping, do that most weekends.
Bungee jumping, off-piste skiing, you know, any dangerous...
Extreme sports.
Then you're thinking, is this somebody who's kind of flatlined and is looking for feelings to replace horrible feelings that they might have? Because they've pushed down the worries they might have, or the shameful feelings. They've pushed them down so far, they're not really feeling much at all. So the only time they do feel anything and have the chance to discharge negative feelings is when they're really full of fear and, you know, going through all full of adrenaline and doing their extreme sports. And that's a way of letting out some of the negativity.
Can that be positive?
Well, yeah, it's positive for them, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because,
but would you be like, it's not really tackling the root cause?
Well, it's not tackling the root cause. It's just managing it. And as therapists, we want to know that because we're looking for signs of trauma. And people generally feel serious shame when there's been some kind of trauma. And we don't realise, and this is a whole other podcast, but we don't realise, most of us, we think of trauma in terms of, I was in a car crash, a bomb went off, you know, I fell in the river, something nasty like that. But actually, you can live with ongoing trauma, which can also have a very shaming effect. So, for instance, having to creep around, keeping the noise down because there's someone ill in your house, can cause so much stress that, particularly if you can't keep the noise down, you're always in trouble and you're told you're a rotten sod for or whatever,
for waking up
the baby or grandma or whoever.
Yeah, yeah.
Then you start to develop that bad feeling about yourself, and you may try to, if it's not dealt with, if nobody helps you to deal with that, then you may develop serious shame.
Yeah, and take up mountain biking.
And take up, well, mountain, yeah. Yeah.
And the attack other one, it's like, oh, of course, well, yes, I hit him with my car, but he shouldn't have been standing there.
Exactly.
And yes, I said that terrible thing in that party, but she was asking for it.
She was asking for it. Exactly. When I suspect a couple of one having what have being at one end of the spectrum, the attack self, and the other being at the other end, I always say, supposing you slipped over on a banana skin that had been left on your kitchen floor, had fallen, or something slippy on your kitchen floor, supposing you fell over, what would you say? One of them will often say, oh, silly me. And the other one will say, who left this fucking banana skin here?
I mean, okay. The thing is, I now want to get into the nitty gritty of that and be like, well, where exactly was the banana skin? Because I feel like if it was right in the middle of the room, I'd be like, silly me. If it was like in somewhere slightly inconspicuous, but where you could slip on it, I'd be like, where the fuck left a banana skin there?
Well, yeah, but we're talking about just, you know, just in general.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It was funny. I was once at Marylebone Station and there was some snow on the ground, and about six of us all went and all slipped over. We were all there on the floor, and it was really interesting to see who jumped up and just ran away, you know, clearly very embarrassed to have fallen over.
Withdrawing.
Yes, exactly.
Withdrawing.
Physically
wow.
withdrawing.
Okay, yeah.
And
yeah.
who else, and who was saying, where's the station manager? You know, and who was
the
going?
Karens.
And and so you'd got that whole thing going on. I was sitting on the floor laughing.
Avoidant.
Maybe that's what it was.
I bet you were. You were going.
I was sitting there laughing, and so you know.
And there was another person actually sat there going, "Oh, I'm so silly. I should have seen that black ice."
Well, no, they'd run away. But it was interesting. There were six people there. We all had a different reaction.
That is amazing.
Well, I was teaching that day, so I went running into
hobbling into
the university and said, guess what happened? Guess what? I just had a real life example of shame in action.
Yeah.
And
wow.
And they were suitably impressed.
I bet they bloody were. I just think that's really interesting that was sometimes these two things couple together. So you might withdraw, and let's say I said that terrible thing at the party, and I run away from the party, and I go, I'm an idiot. So I've withdrawn and attacked self. Mm. But also, can I withdraw and attack other? Does that quite work? Could I run away and then send text to everyone and be like, well, it's actually your fault?
It's unlikely that you would do that. Mm. You might do withdraw, avoid.
So you would withdraw from your family and go, sorry guys, I have to go mountain biking today. I just have to.
Well, I have to, you know, I have to go and do illegal
street drugs.
Drink. Yeah. I have to go and take drugs, drink, self-harm, something like that. Yeah. More likely. Mm. More likely that you'd go that way than sort of bigging yourself up, if you see what I mean.
Absolutely. So, those examples, is that a form of attack self? Potentially,
well, isn't it? Because you are damaging yourself knowingly if you drink too much. I mean, if anyone's ever had a hangover, they will know.
Why do all the good things have to have bad things attached to them?
Yeah,
it's a real shame that
not all of them.
It's a real shame. Okay, I think that's fascinating. Let's have a little break and come back afterwards because I want to ask you about just a couple more specific examples. And then how this all links to sex and relationships.
Oh, it so does.
Whoa.
People often ask me what my regular London pub is, but that assumes there's a pub I can easily return to, so please stop asking that.
London Pub Reviews, written by Paul Ewan and featuring Tim Key. A Hattrick podcast.
Did you save my seat? Why? I'm at a completely different pub now, with different seats. Catch up.
Available now, wherever you get your podcasts.
Drinking with dignity. Yes, sir. Yes, madam. That's me all over.
Welcome back to The Real Sex Education. Mum did a little jig then. If you're watching on YouTube, you'll love it. That's just a plug again for the YouTube. We're at the RSC pod on there as well, if you want to check us out on there. Leave us a lovely comment and we'll pin the nice ones to the top. This is also another time that you can review the podcast on Apple and Spotify. Just go to the show page, you can do that. Good, little bit of housekeeping in the middle. Love that. Don't attack self. Don't attack other. Praise us.
Yes.
Yeah, give us five
idea.
Stars. That's a good
idea.
You know,
I love that.
Is this us shaming them into it? Sex, relationships. Mm-hmm. How does this and how does shame come into that?
Well, people do have arguments where they're in relationships. People will quite often pass their shame onto their partner. Sometimes people will do things which make the other person feel bad. I mean, for instance, when people say something which isn't true about their partner, it's much more likely to make their partner stand their ground and defend themselves, when what they should be doing is going, that's ridiculous, is saying that's daft, and sort of batting back what is called a projection. So they bat back the projection to the other person and they don't take it and they walk off. That's what should happen, really, if someone is being, you know, silly and just trying to get rid of their shame onto you. But they don't. If I was to say to my partner, you haven't done the washing up again, you are an absolute bastard, you never do anything, you are worthless, you do nothing around here, I do everything, you're a complete and utter waste of space, right? I could say that. Quite enjoyed that, actually.
Yeah, that felt bad.
Yeah, I know. You should have seen his face. Oh, you can. So I could say that. And if that person had actually just done all the washing, folded it, hung it out, you know, dried everything, done the ironing, you know, thought, oh, my goodness, nothing could be more unfair, that instead of saying, oh, don't be ridiculous, you know, you're just in a bad mood and gone off, that and batted back the ball of shame, that would be, I'd probably go, yeah, he's right, actually. But what will happen is the person will say, what about you? What about you? When's the last time you took out the rubbish? When's the last time you washed up? When's the last time? The last time you washed up, it was all smeary.
But is that, in that sense, is that the defending, are they attacking other there?
Yeah. I mean, well, the reason that we attack other people is to make us feel good about ourselves. So in one way, we discharge our shame onto the other person and we build up our sense of okayness. Mm. So we give them the bad bit. I mean, actually, you can be with somebody who leaves you feeling full of shame.
Yeah.
And they go away and they feel better and they leave you feeling awful. I mean, sometimes it happens in the therapy room and the therapist feels awful, but it happens a lot between couples.
But then what do you do to get out of that?
Well, I mean, what I just said, which is bat back the projection, you know, assess it. Is this realistic? If you really never do the washing up, then what do? You say, I'm so sorry. I'm just so tired when I come in. Mm-hmm. You know, what I'll have to do is get up half an hour earlier and do it in the morning.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And you say, sorry, you're forgiven. You're back in the team.
Because I've got to say, you know, when you've said to me, Digory, for God's sake, will you hoover the stairs? How many times have I asked you? And I will sit there and I will seethe and I will be so angry. And I'll think to myself, doesn't she know what I'm doing? I've been sat in my room all day playing PlayStation. I am so busy. Of course I can't hoover the stairs.
I know, it's unreasonable, isn't it?
Exactly. And I'll think, and then as I'm seething, I'll think, come on now, put your headphones in. Put your shorts on, because weirdly, I get quite hot when I hoover, and hoover the damn stairs and apologise and all that sort of stuff. But it's that thing of like, because I think that I have that moment of spike where I'm like, it's time to defend. And either I'll withdraw or I'll get upset or whatever, or I'll ready myself to attack back. But it's about...
Dear listener, I'd just like you to know that I do not use shame. I use sarcasm. Oh, is that shaming? So I will come along and say, oh, when are you going to do the stairs then?
Yeah, which obviously fills me with rage. Like, fills me with rage.
Because it makes you feel shame. Because you know you should have done it before.
I should have done it.
Yeah.
So I'm not trying to be like, oh, let's call you out for me. I'm the dick here.
Well,
you do everything. And the one thing I don't do.
I mean, what were we talking about originally before we got into the bloody stairs?
We were talking about relationships, but also, you know, what about sex?
Well, I mean, sex has been used throughout history as a way of controlling people. You know about the stigma associated with things like having babies outside marriage, which still exists in some countries. Being gay still exists in some countries. Well, a lot of countries, actually. Mm. So people's sexual behaviour has always been under scrutiny, but it changes over history. And so now people feel shame associated with not having sex. You know, did you know an interesting thing? The word heterosexual used to mean something like sex maniac originally, right? Yeah. It used to mean something like someone who has too much sex. And what does it mean now? It means straight. So it means someone who has an appropriate amount of sex and with a member of the opposite. So that's not what it started out as, which just goes to show how things change over time and people wouldn't guess what it originally meant.
Yeah.
From the way it's used now.
Yeah, we've been talking about shame on quite a micro level with a lot of these examples, but this is it on a macro level.
Yeah.
Like you say, certain laws and certain religions and certain
things will
shame us with these things, saying thou shalt not do this,
Well, a really good example, which has come up for me a bit recently, people talking about this, is the whole idea that people should be married to one person and be monogamous, and the idea of the one forever. And the whole idea of the one forever sort of began with the 1880 Marriage Act, when marriage was defined for the first time, what it was in the UK. So defined for the first time as the union of one man, one woman. So then you got all those Victorian novels coming out about the one and all that romance and all of that. That was very popular then. And that's when people started coming together. Now, what that coincided with was the Industrial Revolution and when people had to move away from their communities to work. So if they were blokes wandering around and going to this factory and that factory miles away from their families, it would have been incumbent on the state and the church to look after their families that had been abandoned. And that's why we have the whole idea of the one and monogamous relationships. It's all a matter of pragmatism. Your face.
So
people are shamed into believing that they should only have sexual interest in one other person in their whole lives, that there is another half out there waiting for them. And that is a big issue of shame. I mean, the being unfaithful is a huge cause of shame. And maybe we wouldn't be so upset by it if we felt it was normal and natural, and if the opposite view had been taken, that it's not normal to have the one, it's not normal to go into pairs and be with one person forever. It actually works really well for families to bring up their own children, so you know, yeah, that's fine, you know, it works. But traditionally people would have had more than one lover, often, and still in many countries, more than one wife, and children would be brought up by a community, not by a nuclear family.
Yeah. I mean, I think some people will recoil at hearing that, because...
They might well do.
Yeah, but...
I'm not advocating it, I'm just saying.
No, but that is interesting. And also, you know, the idea, Esther Perel talks about this, another, I like to call her a big sex therapist, but I mean, you know... figuratively big, you know, she's big and famous. Check out her podcast; it's great.
And Belgian,
yes. She says people think, you know, cheating is the worst thing in the world and non-monogamy is something that should be feared. But actually, so many monogamous people are non-monogamous in the sense that they cheat and stuff all the time. And so this feeling of being monogamous never really has gone away. Obviously, people listening to this and myself will be thinking, well, I don't do that. But there's plenty of people that do. And that would maybe add to the argument that maybe polyamory and non-monogamy is a viable option. And exactly what you just said there as well. And it's funny, though, in her amazing Belgian accent, she says in her TED talk, she goes, oh, what you're thinking is this woman's French, so obviously she is pro-polyamory. And then she goes, that's not true. I'm not French, which is obviously class. And a great
yeah,
line.
Yeah, it's a great line.
But yeah, so that is definitely something to think about. And, you know, I just watched Six the other day, that great musical about Henry VIII's six wives. And he had loads of, you know, again, I guess that's not a very good example because who wants to be like, yeah, I'm going to be non-monogamous like Henry VIII.
Who just chopped people's heads off when he didn't like them. Yeah.
Yeah, and created an entirely new religion based on that.
Yeah, absolutely. But that's a really good example. I mean, the Shame was very, very included in what he was advocating, and when he didn't like something, when he wanted to change something, he just made it shameful. Oh, it's really shameful. I married my brother's wife when my brother died. That's a terrible thing to do. And all of a sudden it was shameful where he'd been cheerfully doing it up until the point he met Anne Boleyn and wanted to marry her.
Yeah.
So the people are shamed for all kinds of terrible reasons, but they're often sexual and, you know,
yeah.
It's an easy target.
Okay. I know we're going to say, if you feel shame about these sorts of things, go to therapy. Is there anything else we can do?
No, I mean, you can be curious about it and you can think about where it comes from and what may make you feel as bad as you do about yourself. I mean, there are all kinds of ways of dealing with shame, of making yourself feel better and turning your attention away from what you feel bad about and towards what you feel good about. And, you know, I always say to people, at the end of the day, think of three things you've enjoyed and three things you're proud of. And, you know, usually for that's getting up in the morning. I'm quite proud of that every single day.
Yeah.
But it will
what be... remind me today. I went for a run today. I'm proud of that.
Well done. Did you enjoy
it? Yeah, I did. And I've enjoyed doing this podcast.
Absolutely.
So I've already done two of those things. So that's interesting because some people are like, three things you liked and one thing you can improve on. But you're not saying
No. Three things...
Because is that because... not self-shaming?
We're thinking yeah. of things. Why are you thinking of something you could improve on? You're thinking of something that you're proud of, and you may be proud of it because you did improve on something. You know, you got up straight away as soon as the alarm went instead of looking at TikTok for half an hour.
Yeah, so I did do that this morning.
Yeah, I mean, but you know, you know what you want to do differently, but you don't have to feel shame. I mean, often you can reframe some of the things that you feel bad about as well. So if, for instance, you're always late for work because you're looking at TikTok in the morning, then you're probably...
That does sound like me.
Then probably people are going to let you know that you're not pulling your weight and all of that, and you will feel shame or guilt or something. But if you look at TikTok for half an hour in the morning and it sets you up for the day and you get out of bed and then you just get on with your day without feeling resentment or, you know, that you've missed out on something, if you've actually done something that makes you feel good, why are you shaming yourself?
Yeah, and maybe what you should do is incorporate that into your day. So get up 15,
exactly.
20 minutes, 30 minutes earlier. Incorporate that into there. Yes, you might have to go to bed sooner, but who cares?
You know, or only look at TikTok until your snooze alarm goes off or something.
And if you are going to look at TikTok, watch at the RSC pod.
You might as well just listen.
You might as well do that. Well. Last thing I want to say as well is it good that also to recognise, now we've talked about withdrawal, attack self, attack other... Mm. And avoidance.
Yeah, definitely notice what those things.
Notice those.
Yeah.
And when you think to yourself, oh, I've just made a real big faux pas here by, you know, giving the example of Harry Potter when it's not at all relevant, don't withdraw. Don't shut the whole thing off. Don't, you know, go and take a load of drugs. Or if you do any of those things, notice you're doing them and think, oh, now why is that? What am I feeling?
Could I have done it differently?
Shame.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the easiest way to... if you feel shame, is to deal with it immediately. So if you've done something that makes you feel bad, then, and you know, it generally involves another person, then talk to that person about it. Because the chances are, if they know, you know, you didn't mean to do it, you don't know what came over you, whatever, whatever, they will make you feel better instantly. I mean, it still might be something that wakes you up in the middle of the night for years to come, but it won't be as bad as it could have been. And you won't need to go and put a paper bag on your head and hide for 6 months.
Mum, I'm sorry I used Harry Potter as an example.
I wish you'd stop mentioning it.
Wonderful stuff. Everyone, thank you so much for joining us. And please make sure you're subscribed, following us, or whatever, to wherever you're listening to this now. I can hear a phone going off in the background. I can't tell if that's picking up, but that means it is time to go. Thank you so much, everyone. And we will see you next time for some more Real Sex Education. Bye.
Bye.
You've been listening to The Real Sex Education, which is hosted by Diggory Waite and Kate Campbell. The show is produced by Diggory Waite, and the executive producer is Claire Broughton. The Real Sex Education is a Hattrick podcast.
This podcast is based on the real-life relationship between Diggory Waite and his mother, accredited sex therapist Kate Campbell. The show is therefore inspired by, but otherwise unrelated to, the TV show Sex Education. But yes, Diggory does wish his mother was played by Gillian Anderson.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.